mamish the last pasuk, Perek Yud, pasuk Gimel. You'll notice something fascinating. It's almost like a perhaps anticlimactic conclusion. The Megillah says, Ki Mordechai HaYehudi Mishne LaMelech, he was second to the king, Mishne LaMelech Achashverosh, okay. Vigadol LaYehudim, he was what?
Great
for the Jews, big for the Jews. V'ratsoy LaRov Echav, he was ratsoy, worthy of, or accepted by, Rov Echav, Doresh Tov La'amo, he was a good spokesman for his people. The Dover Shalom, he spoke about peace, L'chol Zarah, he wanted Shalom Tov for his people and spoke peace. It sounds like a very positive conclusion. At first glance, the conclusion of the Megillah seems to be upbeat, positive. Mordechai is a hero, and that's how he goes down in the last pasuk. However, there's one phrase here which is somewhat peculiar, worthwhile to look at very quickly, which is this phrase of Rov, Ratzoy LaRov Echav. Who is he Ratzoy? Who really approved him? Who liked him? Rov. Now, one could have said Rov means the majority or the masses, as some of the Mefarshim do. Maybe one could have said Rov is Lav Dafka. However, there are Mefarshim out there, both Rashini, based upon the Gemara Megillah, as well as the Avnei Ezra, who see Rov is Dafka. Rov means specifically. And therefore, perhaps one can argue Rov means majority, because there's always someone out there who's going to complain. You know, you can't win them all. That's just how life is. But if you look at Rashi, quoting the Gemara Megillah, they say something almost shocking. They argue, Rov Echav Lo Lekol Echav Milamed. Shepiresh mimenu miktsas Sanhedrin l'fisha nasekarv l'malchus v'yabatel mitalmudo. Not everyone liked him, just majorities. Why didn't some people like him? Mordechai was too much involved in politics, too much involved in the government. He didn't have enough time to sit and learn. And therefore, there were people on the Sanhedrin who were very critical of Mordechai. Charedim. Beyond the hashkafic political give and take, perhaps, that took place in the end of Sefer Megillas Esther, and it is an interesting question as to, I guess, dating modern orthodoxy and the difference between the right and the left. There really are traces going back, presumably, this far, at least according to Chazal. One may wonder why anyone would interpret the Megillah in such a way that it concludes on such an anticlimactical, disappointing note. In other words, here is this guy, you don't get the impression, not one hint throughout the entire Megillah, that there's any critique to be raised on Mordechai. The entire Megillah, he's a hero from day one, straight through the end. He's positive, he's upbeat, he's good, he takes care of Esther, he saves the day, he does everything right. And then we conclude and like, yeah, he's a great guy, but he didn't learn enough Torah. End of story. Now, I guess the question is, what are we driving at over here? Like, why would anyone write a story that way or conclude that way? It's like almost bizarre. Why would anyone interpret Megillah that way? So the truth is, the whole critique is like a hidden critique. And I have a theory that there's a whole hidden storyline going on here, only written in parallels. Now, I'll start off with the first parallel, the parallel between Esther and Yosef. Let's start off. Esther and Yosef were both Jewish heroes in the secular world who saved the Jews by influencing non-Jewish kings. Both stories end similarly. After the salvation, each hero remains behind as a Jew in the palace, in the foreign secular palace. Number three, both Esther and Yosef are extremely attractive individuals described by the word na'ar, who found, quote-unquote, chein in the eyes of the other. Yosef in the eyes of the warden, Bereishis Lamed Ches Chaf Aleph. Esther in the eyes of anyone who saw her, Perek Beis Pasuk Tazayin, Tazvav. Beyond that, both Esther and Yosef lost a parent at a young age. They were separated from their families. alone in a foreign land outside of Eretz Yisrael. Yosef was courted by an aristocratic woman from the local country, Ashes Potiphar, while similarly, in a similar vein, Achashverosh, the local aristocrat, courted Esther. To be his queen. Ultimately, each Esther and Mordechai married into the local aristocratic family. Esther marries Achashverosh. Yosef marries the daughter of Potiphar. Esther legally had to wait a long time for the king to call her into her palace while Yosef waited in jail for the king to call him. Esther was not allowed to enter into the king's inner chamber without being called, and Yosef was not allowed out of jail. However, upon being brought into the inner king's inner chamber, and upon a long wait, each of these two characters' lives go through metamorphosis. They each transforms from a powerless peasant into an incredible, influential, dominant government official. Each with the facility to save, facilitated in order to save Klal Yisrael. Both at first, Esther and Yosef withhold their true identity. Esther never tells Achashverosh who she is, and Yosef never informs his brother at first who he is. Moreover, they don't just withhold their identity, but they do so from serving in the palace as a royal figure. And after initially hiding who they were, they each ultimately reveal their true identities in an incredible, dramatic manner, one that serves as a turning point in the story, a central, pivotal moment. Each one reveals who they are by saying, "Surprise, I'm a Jew." He didn't know that. Yosef's like, "Surprise, I'm Jewish." Esther's like, "Surprise, I'm Jewish." Yosef brilliantly crafts a plan, puppeteering people by falsely accusing his brothers, capturing Shimon, ultimately isolating Binyamin. Esther, equally ingenious, invites Achashverosh and Haman into her party, manipulating, arranging, overseeing, culminating in her accusing of Haman for mass genocide. But the parallel is a little bit stronger because both events culminate. Both events peak, crescendo, is that the word? Occur when they take off their mask and they say, "You don't know who I am. Here, I'm a Jew," and the whole story changes. And the question for starters is, why would you do that? And we'll get there momentarily. But at least there's a seemingly central, interesting parallel between these two episodes. Number two, not only is there a parallel between Yosef and Esther, but Yosef serves as a paradigm for a parallel between Mordechai as well. For starters, take a look in Perek Beis, Pasuk Vav. Look at how the Megillah introduces Mordechai. Asher haglam Yerushalayim im hagola asher haglata im yachanya melch Yehuda asher haglan nebuchadnezzar melch Bavel. Golus, 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 golus. Four times introduced with the word golus in this one pasuk. He was exiled from his family. Yosef too was sold, exiled, sold by his family. Yet despite being exiled from the land and finding themselves in a foreign land, both Mordechai and Esther rise incredibly to political power, try to figure out people in the world who have risen as quickly as they did, certainly in Tanakh, who makes their way up to the king that quickly, second in command. They each became advisors to the king. Mordechai was labeled Mishneh LaMelech. They each received special clothing and a unique status. Both Yosef and Mordechai were challenged daily, yom vayom, as quoted in Chumash as well as in the Megillah. Each one had a challenge. Ashes Potiphar wanted to sleep with Yosef every single day. Similarly, Haman challenged Mordechai, yom vayom. In both stories, the king gets angry at two of his assistants because they brought him bad food. Achashverosh gets upset at Bigsan and Seresh. Paro gets upset at the Sar HaMashkim and the Sar HaUfim. And in both situations, Yosef and Mordechai find themselves caught up in the middle between king and traitor. Each rose to power primarily on one single act, by helping the king, by informing him of important information. Yosef notified or informed him about the interpretation of the dreams, Mordechai, that people were trying to poison him. Ultimately, and take a look at Sefer Bereishis for 1 second. It's probably worthwhile to look at it. Bereishis Mem Aleph. I'll try not to make you flip around so much, but take a look in Bereishis, Perek Mem Aleph. Pasuk Mem Beis, 41, 42, and 43 for that matter. Bereishis Mem Aleph, Perek Mem Aleph, Pasuk Mem Beis says as follows. Tell me how unbelievably eerie this sounds. You wouldn't believe they were in Bereishis. I'm making you see it inside. Vayaser paro eta batom mial yado v'iteno sal Yosef v'yal beisho so big day sheish v'yasem revid hazahav al tzavarov. He took off his ring. He puts on his clothing. Doesn't that sound like Mordechai? But if you're not yet convinced, look at the next pasuk. Vayarkevo sobim rekevus hamishna asher lo. They carried him around in the buggy, the carriage of the king. Vayikru lefanav, and they called in front of him as they carried him around to announce the new Jewish king of the land of Egypt. That doesn't remind you of Mordechai in the story of Purim? Avreich v'nasono so'al kol eretz Mitzrayim. Here's someone who's prestigious. Here's someone who's going to be in charge of Mitzrayim. How many times do you find in Tanakh a non-Jewish king taking off his ring and giving it to a Jew to be in charge? The answer is twice, once with Mordechai and once with Yosef. And perhaps the Navi, I should say Megillah more accurately so, is subtly couching into each of these stories a parallel to Yosef. Mordechai is similar to Yosef. Esther is similar to Yosef. And now one may wonder, why is that the case? Why would you couch that into a story? What do you gain by doing that? Before I share with you my hypothesis, and again, you can't know for sure, it's just a theory, but I'll share my speculation momentarily. Let me share with you, for starters, the opposites. And you know me well enough to know that they're not just different, they're opposites, and they're meaningful. I'm going to put them all together, but really half are about Yosef, half are about Mordechai, and the leftover remnants, after you're done with the two halves, I know mathematically that doesn't work, are about the story in general. In contrast, how Yosef was exiled and as an individual, Mordechai was exiled as part of a nation. Yosef and Mordechai were both given special clothing, but Yosef received this as a permanent gift from his father, while Mordechai's was temporary and not from his father, but by the king. Moreover, and more importantly, Yosef's clothing were a gift connected to his misfortune. His downfall occurred because he was given the Kesonis Pasim, this technicolor dream coat, while Mordechai's were connected to his success, and even greater, Yosef's directly caused his misfortune, while Mordechai's were as a result of or reflection of his success. While in the Yosef story, redemption began with Paro's dream at night, when Paro couldn't fall asleep. How about the Achashverosh story? Where does redemption begin? With Achashverosh's insomnia. He's up all night. He can't fall asleep. Furthermore, Achashverosh asks his most trusted assistant, Haman, for advice and follows it. How about Paro? A total stranger, someone he never heard of until now. Haman's advice was selfish and self-serving. Additionally, Haman was the first person Achashverosh asked. Yosef only was answered when all others could not, and moreover, he was interested in helping Paro out. Haman comes to Achashverosh's house uninvited, whereas Yosef was commanded, summoned by Paro. Paro listens to Yosef's advice, and it helps Yosef. Ironically, Achashverosh also listens to Haman's advice, but what? It backfires on Haman. He does the exact opposite. While Yosef rose to the top because of his advice, Haman sunk to the bottom. Esther was taken by Achashverosh, the one courting her, while Ashes Potiphar was unsuccessful of her courting of Yosef, but the contrast is stronger, much more extended, because as a result of Achashverosh courting Esther, She's brought up to the top of our, the top of the society, queen. How about Yosef? He fell to the bottom, incarcerated, imprisoned. Has to rise to the top, Yosef sinks to the bottom. And although ultimately Yosef and Esther both review their true selves, Esther communicates that Achashverosh does not know her. You don't know who I am, she says. You thought I was like you, I'm Jewish. And what does Yosef say? You don't know who I am. I'm the exact opposite of him, differently. You thought you don't know who I am. In fact, you do. You thought I was a non-Jew. I'm a Jew, says Esther. Yosef says you thought I was a non-Jew. Pardon me. Definitely. Esther says, Achashverosh, you think your family and you know me. Turns out you don't. Yosef says, we're not really family, is what you thought. But in fact, we are really family and you do know me. Although Yosef and Esther both were legally obligated to wait until being called upon the king, Yosef actually did. Esther came in front of the door uninvited, breaking in, endangering her life. Yosef's primary intention was to assist Paro, save the Egyptian king, while Mordechai's primary intention was to save the Jewish people. Vayir Shushan Tavzmecha was just a byproduct, peripherally mentioned it on the side. Achashverosh took his wife Esther from Mordechai, meaning the king took his wife from the primary character in the story. Paro, instead of taking a wife from the hero of the story, instead, brought him a wife. Paro arranges for Yosef's wife. Take a look in Mem Aleph, Mem Zayin, Mem Dalet, if you want. Yosef was alone in Egypt with no one to communicate, no one to support. His family was all gone, while Esther was consistent communication with Mordechai with full support. Achashverosh put both assassins, both people on death row to death. Achashverosh kills both his big son and Sarah. Shapar only executes one of the two of them. Yosef falsely accuses Binyamin, while Esther correctly accuses Haman. And perhaps this parallel is not accidental. Perhaps it's intentional. Now the question becomes why. Why would anyone write a story this way and couch into it this type of parallel? So I'll share with you, for starters, what the parallel may symbolize, and then I'll share with you what the contrast may symbolize. With that, we'll take us all full circle. Maybe just like Mordechai, Yosef also led a salvation, redeemed everyone, saved the day in a way that was very mundane, non-miraculous, non-nes nigla, rather a nes nistar. No one had an overt miracle performed, yet clearly redemption occurs. Hashem is puppeteering behind the scenes. Too many unlikely coincidences. And either story allows for us to believe this is by chance. Yosef faithfully trusts Hashem that being sold, falsely accused of adultery, imprisoned, and ultimately crowned as Mishnah Lemelech, well, part of a larger plan. Mordechai, equally devoted, expresses his faith when he asks for Esther's help. He confidently states that we can't know the larger plan, but nonetheless, Esther, you got to be part of it. Imhacharesh tacharishi beis hazos revech v'atzala emodin melkem acher. However, perhaps it's a second reason why there's a parallel. You can imagine someone critiquing Mordechai. You can imagine someone critiquing Esther. This is what a Bas Yisrael does. This is what a Jewish girl does. She's sleeping with the Shegetz. She's married to a guy. She's in the middle of the king, sleeping with him. That's what she does. And perhaps the point may very well be a defense. Perhaps Mordechai subtly couches into the Megillah a defense on a hashkafic level for himself and for Esther. You think we were doing things that were wrong? You think I made a mistake? You may be right, I wasn't involved in learning Torah enough, Mr. Group from Sanhedrin. You may think I was too involved in Bittul Torah and too involved in the government and therefore a violation of Bittul Torah, too involved in politics, too involved in saving people. I should have been learning more, but you want to know what? At least there's good precedence for it. It's not without precedence. It's not without a Mesorah. going into the world, being involved in politics, being involved in government as a foreigner in a foreign land, that's been done before. And if your critique exists and you want to be critical of me, you should be equally critical of... Be equally critical of Yosef. And perhaps the contrast is even more. Because Yosef had, legitimately so, justifiably so, selfish intentions. He went to save himself, went to save the country. Mordechai's like, I went in to save Klal Yisrael. My intentions were even more pure. And perhaps that's exactly what what Mordechai was driving at the end of the Megillah. And if you look carefully, let's go back one more time. The last pasuk of the Megillah. Ki Mordechai yudem mishneh lemelech. I was second to the king. You know who I was like? Yosef. Vegadol Yehudim. I was great amongst the Jews. Ratzoy l'rov echav. And there are those who critique me, but you want to know what? I was at least mishneh. I was like Yosef. And even if you think hashkafically I was wrong, and even if Yosef's wrong, at least respect that Doresh Tov Lamo. V'dover shom l'chol amo. Even if my ideology was wrong, which I think I can defend, at least know my intentions were right. I was doresh tov la'amo, v'dover shom l'chol zaro. Yosef here may be offering two different defenses. One is, ideologically, there's what to be said for what I did. Beyond that, emotionally, religiously, at least know that I did was what I thought was right. Perhaps Mordechai's concluding message is, you can debate me hashkafically, and I'll even respect your point. I'm not going to be critical of it. I'll certainly defend myself. And I'll defend myself on two accounts. Number one, know that I didn't do anything that wasn't done before. I followed in Mesorah. This wasn't creative, innovative in a new, unhealthy way. This is well-rooted in our Jewish tradition. Yosef had gone through a similar situation, number one. And number two, even if you think I'm wrong, at least know my intentions were good. And perhaps through the entire Megillah, this is not a predominant part of the book. This is not a overt part of the Sefer, but perhaps in a covert, hidden way, this hashkafic give and take was occurring. This hashkafic battle going back and forth. And it concludes with Yosef's ultimate defense, which was, I was like the Mishnah Lamelech. And if you think I'm wrong, at least know my intentions are good. We'll stop here.